Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 22nd day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, Andy Schaefer should be here from the Andersons facility outside of Everly, Iowa. We'll check up on cash basis there in the northwestern part of that great corn-producing state. And then as we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass's Agrible. In fact, Agrible will be participating in an innovation seminar in the month of February. We'll hear more about that today as well on the closing market report. In the second half hour of the program, Commodity Week comes up. Our panelists include Brian Stark, Kurt Kimmel, and Wayne Nelson. Stay with us for the whole hour if you can.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's the way the numbers finished up on this Friday afternoon. From the corn pit at the CME Group, March contract in Chicago at $3.70 and a quarter, 3 and a quarter cents higher. May futures up 3 at 374 and three quarters, and July 3 higher as well at 379 and three quarters. December $3.92 a bushel, up 2 and three quarters. May beans were down 2 at 876 and a half on the settlement price. That's the March, really. May at 277 and a quarter, a penny and three quarters lower. July at 882, down 2 and a quarter, and next year's November at 883 and three quarters, 3 and a half cents lower. Bean meal down 370, and bean oil up 56 cents. Wheat futures in the March were a half higher at 475 and a half at the end of the day. July at 485 and a quarter, up a quarter for the soft red, and July hard red at $4.90 and three quarters, down a half cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago currently trading $2.65 higher at $132.90 in the February, April at $133.85, up $2.67.5. January feeders at $160.30. They're $1.62.5 higher in February. Lean hogs are 60 cents lower at $63.15. Ethanol at 3 3/10 of a cent higher, $1.90, rather $1.39 and 3/10. Crude oil up $2.49 a barrel at $32.02. The wholesale price of gasoline 4 8/10 higher at $1.07 and 9/10, and heating oil at 98 8/10 of a cent, 9 1/10 of a cent higher for the day. Natural gas at $2.13 and 7/10, down 1/10 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 15,984, up 193 points.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647. Or on the internet at batescom.net.
For the Illinois State Water Survey, this is State Climatologist Jim Angel. It was a very cold and snowy week for much of Illinois. The statewide temperatures were 7 degrees below average, and many places reported their first drop below zero. A winter storm struck Illinois on Tuesday and Wednesday. Snowfall amounts of 3 to 5 inches were common across central Illinois, and less than 3 inches in southern and northern Illinois. We're still well below average on snowfall for the winter. The northern half of the state is down 10 to 25%, while the southern half is down 25 to 50%. The National Weather Service's Climate Prediction Center released their outlooks for the next year. The forecast for the rest of winter is for an increased chance of being both warmer and drier than average. The forecast for spring and early summer shows an increased risk of being both warmer and drier than average as well. The primary driver for this forecast is El Nino, which is an area of warmer waters in the eastern Pacific. It generally brings warmer and drier conditions to Illinois in winter and spring, and this El Nino is expected to fade out by late spring or early summer. It will be replaced by so-called neutral or average conditions in the Pacific. However, there is a chance of a La Nina developing in late summer. That is when you get relatively cold waters in the eastern Pacific Ocean. And it spells potential trouble for Illinois because we tend to run hotter and drier in late summer and early fall in those situations. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the Farm Bill. And at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. It is the 22nd day of January. Mike Zuzulo is out of the office. Dale Durkles from AgriAdvisor in Bloomington, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the marketplace in his stead. Thanks, Dale, for doing that. I'm going to start not with the grains and the oil seeds, but with one of the things we've been talking about for quite some time here on the Closing Market Report for a while, and that has been making the news all this week and for some time too. That's crude oil. It finally bounced. Tell me about it and where it stands, and maybe if there's some other markets you're interested in.
You know, when you look at crude oil to begin with, you know, we got down below $30 a barrel this last week, and arguably, you know, crude oil prices dropped a lot lower than an awful lot of people expected just a few months ago, even. But, you know, now that we got into these price ranges, you know, what you started to hear was, well, could we go to 20? Could we go to 15? Could we go to 10? And, you know, the potential downside was starting to get exaggerated in it. You know, much like, you know, back in the summer of 2012 when we hit corn over 8, you know, I started to hear people go, can we go to 9? Can we go to 10? You know, and you started to hear those same things. The other thing I've noticed, you know, looking at a lot of markets in a lot of years past, you tend to find a lot of times when you set major bottoms, major tops, some kind of a news event that seems to accompany it. And this, you know, just last weekend, we finally took the sanctions off of Iran. Iran could start selling crude oil into the world market. And when you look at crude itself and you put it in that perspective, you go, is there really much left that can make this picture any more bearish than it already is? And so you have to wonder if people that have been short are starting to reel that in, and people that are end users starting to go, you know, what's my downside risk? And all of a sudden we start to find some levity in the market like we've had here all week, in fact, with crude up $5 just in the last 2 days.
It's up $2.50 at this hour, so it's moving pretty nicely to the upside. Do you put it in a broader context for commodities? Do you follow an index as well? Are there cycles that are involved in this process?
You know, one thing that's been apparent for a long time, I watch what's called the Continuous Commodity Index. It used to be called the CRB Index, but it's got a history that goes all the way back into the late 1940s. Crude oil became It includes 17 different commodity futures, of which crude oil became a part of the mix in that in the middle 1980s. But even prior to when crude oil became a part of it, commodity indices have a long history of having a cyclic pattern, three-year low to low, and we have been in a window here since early last, well, spring, late last winter, to put in a three-year low. We're now getting to the end of that window for a three-year low to be put in place. There's also a semi-annual cycle in commodity indices that bottoms, strangely enough, around the 4th of July and again around the change in the calendar year. So you're really starting to wonder, you know, are we really in a point where we're going to put in lows here? Crude oil also has this same three-year cyclic pattern to it when you look at the history of it, even going back into cash prices prior to the middle 1980s. So, you know, we're in a point here from a cyclic standpoint where we could change. And I think really from a psychological standpoint, given what happened a week ago with Iran, we're there.
What does it mean for you in the broader context, either of new crop, corn and soybeans, or old crop that's already in the bin?
Well, you know, the one thing that's been apparent and been a part of the market here over the course of really the last 2 months especially, and really the last month, has been this ongoing decline in crude oil, the ongoing decline in commodity indices, of which grain are a part. But, you know, if we change the psychology, and that's really the first thing you typically always change when you put in a top or a bottom, you change the psychology. So if we all of a sudden start to pull this negative psychology back out of the mix at this point, that says, you know, the grain markets themselves probably will have a little bit more bounce to their step going forward, you know, once we get the news ingredients that may be the fuel. But when I look at grains themselves, you know, it's kind of funny to me, and this year I'm kind of looking at the 50s. You know, the corn market seems to have lows around 350, wheat prices lows around 450, and beans lows around 850, you know, and every time we go down to those levels, these markets get a bounce. So we're really just going through the base building process, I think.
How long will it take?
That's something you never know for sure. You know, the beans, I think maybe and maybe even the wheat are really the ones you watch a little bit closer. I know the wheat market, you know, we're in a window here at any point where we could put in a 40-week low, and this will extend for a number of weeks here yet. But when we turn the wheat on a 40-week low, we'll turn a potentially 6-year low. Beans, if we get a little bit of a bounce in the step and get up over about 9-10 on the March, it'll look like the low we put in last fall was the 2-year low, and so we've got major lows behind us there. Corn's really kind of the odd man out here for a few weeks yet, because I've got another short-term cycle low due on corn as we get into the early part of March. So I think it's probably going to be still kind of a deadish sort of winter. And looking ahead to the spring, the beans maybe being the one I'd watch the closest, because South American weather can still play a game there before we get on into our spring.
Of the three commodities, wheat, corn, soybeans, which is the heaviest in your mind?
Corn.
And I take it soybeans is the one with the most potential to the upside?
I think it's the one that's got potential in the short term for the most bounce. And by the short term, I'm talking the next 3 to 6 weeks, something like that. But the corn, to me, is the one that is really somewhat the heaviest, and it's because of that cyclic influence being out in front of it. Wheat and corn are kind of tied together. So, you know, it really is kind of difficult to separate the two apart at this time yet.
Items you're looking forward to in the future that you think will make a difference, whether they're just dates or there are particular events that you're watching for?
Well, the first thing, you know, this last week we walked in on Monday and the weather forecast for southern Brazil, Argentina were hot and dry, and I mean hot, 90s to 100. Really kind of brutal weather for them at this point. Now, they had moisture reserves to go along with it, some places a little too much, in fact. But I think here in the very short term, you know, I'm every week walking in looking to see what weather forecasts are for southern Brazil and Argentina. And southern Brazil, when you look at Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul, the two big southern states combined, they're about a third of Brazil's crop. So, you know, weather going forward here, and we're still not close to harvest down there. We can still impact seed size, et cetera, and take some potential off the crop down there, and maybe instead of having a crop close to 100 million ton, maybe we do gravitate back towards last year's 96 million ton crop. In Argentina, you have the same similar set of circumstances, albeit people are not quite as optimistic already this year as the crop size we had down there last year, which was exceptional. Then you really look ahead, the end of February, it's around the 20th. I don't remember the exact date. We have the USDA annual outlook forum that they'll put out their ideas about plantings and supply demand. I think those are always important. And then you get into the series of the March forecasts with the one at the last day of March, really the most important.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
All right, good talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Dale Durkles is with AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. He mentioned the weather forecast, and on my private page, and you can visit this, it's a page that I mess with more than anything else, but there is a weather segment there at narrowrow.com. That's narrowrow, all one word, .com. There's a weather segment, and if you scroll down through that weather, you'll find that, in fact, it is hot, really hot, and remains that way in Paraguay, in Mato Grosso do Sul, and in Argentina, up not in the 90s, but in the 100 degree area this week and for a good portion of the next several days. So you might want to check that out. You can do that right there on my own webpage at narrowrow.com. Always visit willag.org, willag.org, because you'll find all kinds of really great programming there, including Commodity Week, which has already been posted, but it's coming up next in the next half hour here on Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, with crude oil prices at 12-year lows, the Texas energy sector, it's taking a pretty good-sized hit. The crude oil market has always been a volatile place, driven as much by speculators as anything else. Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples says the current low prices, he believes, are temporary.
Hopefully, the supply and demand will rectify itself. And so as we find that equilibrium in the marketplace and the global economics take an uptick, then we should see some recovery.
He says when that will happen is pretty much anybody's guess.
But right now, no one thought that we would see this low price environment after seeing $100 oil, and we're just going to have to ride it out a while and see how it goes.
Staples says right now the only option is to cut production. The rig count from last year has now been cut in half. We'll stay with gas and oil prices and world currencies and the impact on agriculture. Russia exported a record high 3.8 million metric tons of grain during the month of December. That thanks, of course, to the weakness in the country's currency. The export increase included 2.7 million metric tons of wheat. The currency decline has allowed traders to lower their prices for Russian wheat by $10 to $12. However, the Russian Ag Consultancy Group says grain exports will likely slip to about 1.5 million metric tons in January due to seasonally lower demand. Just more than a million metric tons of exports from Russia will likely be wheat. However, the group goes on to say that in February and March, grain shipments are likely to pick up again. And finally today, a little closer to home, facing a freight recession caused by slumping commodity prices and industrial output. Number one, U.S. Railway, Union Pacific Corp, says hopes of strong economic growth have so far been undermined by a key missing ingredient, the American consumer. The chief executive officer of Union Pacific says what's causing us some concern is it's hard to figure out where the consumer is at. While Americans were buying automobiles and unemployment numbers looked good, he said labor participation, that's lackluster, and consumers just don't seem to be showing up to purchase goods and services. Ever since oil prices began to decline in 2014, economists and corporate America had hoped this would translate into higher consumption. The chief executive spoke to Reuters after the Omaha, Nebraska-based railway company reported a lower fourth-quarter profit amid declining freight volumes affecting coal, steel, industrial goods, agricultural products as well, that reflected a broad-based commodity slump. The one bright spot was automobile shipments, as consumer goods also took a dive. Just this week, Moody's Investor Service warned of increasing risk of an industrial recession for North American manufacturers. Those that have an exposure to global trade and a strong dollar are a little pessimistic on the terms of the steel industry and capacity of utilization in U.S. plants. On the domestic front, coal's decline has hurt North America's railroads, with shipping falling nearly 12% in 2015 as utilities switched to cheaper natural gas and as a sturdy U.S. dollar hurt coal exports. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Stay with us for the second half of our program today, if you can. Our panelists on Commodity Week include Brian Stark, Wayne Nelson, and Kurt Kimmel. Up next, Monsanto recently announced the new developments coming through the company pipeline for 2016. Michael Clements reports from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Rob Fraley, Chief Technology Officer for Monsanto, says Monsanto is using technology in effort to help farmers produce more with less.
The world population continues to grow. The demand for food is going to nearly double between now and 2050. So So much of this innovation is targeted on how we produce more food with less inputs. You know, that's a good thing for farmers, it's a good thing for consumers, and it's a good thing for the environment.
Fraley says the biggest area of focus for Monsanto's research program is to continue to breed new, higher-yielding crops, and he expects to see new products approved for use this year.
We invest, you know, every year to create new crosses to produce new and better-performing seeds, so breeding is a really key part of it. On the biotech front, we're continuing to discover new and better genes to help farmers control their insect pests and to help control their weeds. We're now starting to discover genes that can help them control diseases. So that's pretty exciting. You know, we're really enthused about bringing the Roundup Ready Extend technology into the marketplace. That's going to be a technology that's going to help farmer control their difficult and resistant weeds.
He says Monsanto is in the final phases of the regulatory process to obtain approval for Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans and Bolgard to Extend Flex cotton. Fraley says there are a couple of new areas in the last few years he calls exciting.
The advances in the data science space with our Climate Corporation has led to new advisors that are helping farmers use satellite images to track diseases in the state of their fields. We're helping farmers do a much better job of assessing how much nitrogen they have available for the crops. And I think the Nitrogen Advisor is a very powerful tool. And, you know, probably one of the things that scientifically is the most exciting is we're now starting to use our biotechnology tools, field testing capabilities to understand microbes in the soil. And we're now discovering microbes which we can treat and coat with the corn or soybean seeds that are enhancing, you know, growth and promoting increased yields.
This year marks the 20th anniversary of the release of Monsanto's first commercial genetically engineered seeds. Looking forward to the next 20 years, Fraley says.
This is such an exciting time because we're seeing an explosion of new advances in agricultural science. We know how to breed better because we know every gene in a corn or a soybean plant. We're discovering new traits and new methods to improve crops with gene editing and all the data science tools and, you know, everything from using the satellites in the sky to the sensors on the farming equipment. I think this integration of the advances in biology and data science are really going to help drive the next green revolution.
Rob Fraley is the chief technical officer for Monsanto Company. He's also a graduate from the University of Illinois, speaking of which, coming up on the 18th day of February, the U of I will host an Agricultural Technology Innovation Summit at the I Hotel. It's open and free to everyone. It's titled Drones, Software, Predictive Analytics, Sensors, Data, Precision Agriculture. You know, modern agriculture is being transformed by a whole confluence of advancing technology, and as a result, record-breaking investments in the sector are supporting new ventures. We hear some of those right here on our shows. In fact, one of them's coming up in the next segment a bit later when we talk to Agrible's Eric Snodgrass. If you've not visited their website, they're one of the companies that will be presenting at the Agriculture Technology Innovation Summit on the 18th day of February at the I Hotel, and they're located in Research Park on the south end of the University of Illinois campus, which campus, and in fact, I believe is uniquely positioned where agriculture, engineering, and technology intersect, and that it's all on its way to becoming a hub of agricultural entrepreneurship. You can register for this free day-long event, the Agriculture Technology Innovation Summit. Find out all the details if you'd like at go.illinois.edu/agtech. Let me repeat that for you again, go.illinois.edu/agtech. The summit is Thursday, February the 18th, from 8:30 to 3 p.m. at the I Hotel and Conference Center, right here in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Friday afternoon, let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. John Friedman is on the line from the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. Good afternoon to you, John. Thanks so much for being with us. I was looking at your basis levels, and corn doesn't look so bad, but beans look pretty sharply lower there to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there just hasn't been as good of a flow of beans moving around here recently. I think a lot of the needs are already covered. These processors already have a lot of their grain in hand, I think, from the commercials. And just so the basis bids haven't been that aggressive to entice a lot of movement from any more commercial elevators or the farmers. I mean, there's really probably only about maybe a 15-cent differential between that of what an elevator's paying and the commercial end users like the AGPs and the CHSs out there.
And so your bids basis is what, 56 under, I think, at the moment?
Yes,
for January 56
under, yep. And I think the processor's bids are around 40 or so.
And how would that compare to what might be a winter doldrum basis bid? Is that normal for you?
No, I mean, usually we're a little more aggressive by about this time frame, both processor and obviously at the elevator here. But, you know, I just think with the slug of beans that we had phenomenal bean yields in this area this previous harvest. You know, what a guy had maybe 50, 55 bushel beans, those were 60 to 65. And so with just such a surplus of beans, not only are they out in the country in the bin, but they're at the commercial elevators too. You know, sooner or later, just grain's got to get moved. You know, you only have so much time frame to get those moved and have space for the following crop year. And I think people are looking at the picture saying, you know, come June, July, we can't really take all these beans.
Thanks, John. I'm sorry we're out of time. John Friedman is with the Andersons from right there in Everly, Iowa. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Eric Snodgrass joins us from Agrible here in town to take a look at a number of things. I think probably, Eric, we probably should start out east with this great big snowstorm they have.
Yeah, it's been a fun one to forecast. We started watching it about a week ago, and a lot of uncertainty in the forecast track until about midweek this week. But when it got going, boy, did it get going. Right now it's dumping a lot of snow across parts of Kentucky and southern Indiana and Ohio and moving into West Virginia and then eventually going to hit Maryland pretty hard and move up the East Coast. And it's dropping enormous amounts of snowfall. I think we might even see something better than 25 inches in the Washington, D.C. area. And it could even push up far enough north to hit a big chunk of New Jersey and probably have a big impact on New York. So it's going to shut some things down on the East Coast. Thankfully, it's a weekend, but it's going to certainly shut things down and clear off the store shelves, that's for sure.
Gridlock in Washington, D.C. is nothing new, just to say.
Right.
Let's go out west instead, where I think they're getting rain.
Yeah, so it's been great. The west, you know, is in historic drought, but this winter, because of El Nino, they've had pretty regular rainfall events, especially Oregon, coastal Washington, where they've had dramatic improvements in their drought in the coastal regions. Even though California's been getting quite a bit of precip, big problem is that the drought that they're in is just so bad it's going to take a long time. But at least it's raining there now. We always got to pay close attention to what California's doing, as they're a pretty big in the ag world in the United States.
Here in our part of the world, we're sandwiched between those two precipitation events. When's our next chance?
We're looking at Monday night into Tuesday. There's a little clipper system that's going to race through northern Illinois, bring some light snow to the northern parts of the growing region, and some light rain to the southern part. This is nothing like the system that's going through the mid-Atlantic right now, but that's really our next chance for precip. And if we think about that in the context of, you know, temperatures, you know, we've had two pretty big bouts of cold air the last couple of weeks. You know, we had some single-digit, even below zero morning temperatures. Well, we're not really seeing that and continuing for the rest of the month. So kind of trying to get out of January without any too much cold left. So kind of a return to normal, possibly even a couple of bouts of warmer than normal conditions as we finish out this month. So that's kind of a turnaround from what we saw the last couple of weeks.
Hold that warmer than normal thought. I want to come back to it. But let's go to South America first, because they're beginning their harvest season. How are conditions there?
Yeah, so like we've been talking about, the southern regions have been wet and good for beans. Northern regions have been okay, but far northern Mato Grosso, a little dry. Now all of a sudden the rains have returned, and they're trying to get out of the fields, get the crop out, and that puts a little stress on the harvest and puts a little stress on the beans. You know, it's not good to harvest them when they're wet. And so to get things to dry down, it's not really happening. So this has an impact on the market, but it, you know, we're not really seeing too much of an impact on the prices of these beans. Looking for some wet conditions in Brazil over the next couple of weeks.
And then finally come back here to the United States in the Midwest. Any indication of the start to the growing season, which is, I don't know, 45 to 60 days now away?
No, yeah, we're trying to hone in on what's happening. And basically the strong El Nino that we had for most of this winter is waning, so it's starting to weaken. And one of the signs that we're starting to see in our statistical modeling and also in our long-range forecasting is the potential for the kind of the eastern half of the Corn Belt and probably the northern parts as well, starting off this next growing season, hopefully a little bit warmer than average.
That's Eric Snodgrass of AgriBull from right here in Urbana-Champaign. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Commodity Week is next.